When we last left Jack Flanders, his aunt, Lady Jowls, was explaining the characters on the outer rim of the Tibetan Wheel of Life.
Ah, nothing quite like a brisk cup of tea. But to continue, this consciousness which stands at the beginning of a new life is represented in the third picture in the form of a monkey grasping a branch. Do you see that, Jack?
Yes.
Now, just as a monkey restlessly jumps from branch to branch, so the consciousness jumps from object to object.
Ah.
Consciousness, however, cannot exist by itself. It has, on the one hand, both the properties of incessantly grasping sense objects or objects of imagination, and of letting go of one object for the sake of another. But it also has the capacity to crystallize and to polarize itself into material forms and mental functions. Consciousness is the basis of the combination, you've heard it referred to, mind and body. This close relationship between bodily and mental functions is compared with two people in a boat. This is shown in the fourth picture, in which you can see a ferryman propelling a boat with two people in it. Do you see it, Jack?
Oh, yes.
Ah, good show. Now, next we have a house with six windows, which depicts the six senses: seeing, hearing, smelling, tasting, touching, and thinking. And the sixth picture symbolizes the contact of the senses with their objects in the form of the first contact between lovers. Do you see that, Jack?
Yes, very nice.
The feeling resulting from the contact of the senses with their objects is represented in the seventh picture by a man whose eye has been pierced by an arrow.
That's a bit strong, don't you think?
Bear with me, Jack. The eighth picture shows a drinker who is served by a woman. It symbolizes the thirst for life or craving caused by agreeable sensations. The arrow in the eye does not indicate pleasure, but only the intensity of the feeling and perhaps its future painful consequences which overtake those who allow themselves to be carried away by agreeable sensations.
I don't know. I never thought of Tibetans as prudes. But they seem to take a lot of the old kick out of life.
From the thirst for life arises the grasping of and clinging to the desired objects. This is symbolized in the ninth picture by a man who plucks fruit from a tree and gathers it into a basket. Clinging leads to the strengthening of the bonds, the bounds of life, and to a new process of becoming. This is symbolized by the sexual union of a man and wife, as seen in the tenth picture.
That's pretty explicit, all right.
The Tibetan attitude towards sexual things is of a disarming naturalness and objectivity. The Tibetan does not hesitate to depict the sexual act and the act of giving undisguised and without ambiguity. Now, the 11th picture shows a woman giving birth to a child. Becoming leads to rebirth in a new existence.
They're just as active as beavers, aren't they?
Jack, be serious. The 12th picture shows a man who carries a corpse on his back to the cremation ground, which illustrates the last of the 12 links of the formula of dependent origination, which says that all that which has been born leads to old age and death. As I have told you on another occasion, if there had not been a will to live and a clinging to the corresponding forms of life, this process of becoming would not have been set into motion.
It's just a vicious circle, isn't it?
That is why the 12-fold formula of dependent origination is represented as a circle. It has neither a beginning nor an end, do you see? Each link represents the sum total of all other links and is the precondition as well as the outcome of all other links. And all phases of this dependent origination are phenomena of the same illusion, the illusion of egohood. By overcoming this illusion, we step beyond the circle in which we imprison ourselves, and we realize that no thing and no being can exist in itself or for itself, that each form of life has the whole universe as its basis, and that the meaning of individual form can only be found in its relationship to the whole. The moment in which the human individual becomes conscious of this universality, he ceases to identify himself with the limits of his temporal embodiment and becomes flooded with a fullness of life in which the distinction between past, present, and future does not exist anymore.
Amen.
And all this has been simply explained by Lama Govinda in his Foundations of Tibetan Mysticism, a book I do recommend.
Well, I'll be sure to read it.
Good, Jack. Hot-cha! Let's have another cup of tea. Here I have a copy for you right now, and it's signed by the Lama Govinda. My goodness, interesting handwriting he has. Shows he's a mystic.
The human mind does not exist only within the human body. We know the mind and the brain are not the same thing. The brain must stay where it is, but the mind is free to roam at will. For example, you, the listener, come with me. Let me borrow your mind for a moment. Your mind is flexible. It can stretch like rubber. For while you will sit there letting your mind go far away into the dark passageways of that mysterious mansion of Inverness, you will still be able to hear everything going on around you. Voices, traffic, everything. The mind is a good friend. Never lose it. That was a joke, you see. So, with your mind, come outside your body, at a distance of 3 feet from you. Now, with your mind, notice the color hair, the eyebrows, the mouth, and the teeth, the lips, and nostrils. Very good. Now again, with your mind, look about the room you are in. What is on the wall in front of you, behind you, to the left? To the right. Good. Now we are going for a journey. First, take your mind up to the ceiling. Now look down at you sitting there. Now leave the building, away across the rooftops. See the buildings passing below. Aha, you are flying. Very good. Now you are flying above the countryside. See the trees far, far below. There's a river way below, a road, pastures, a woods, pine trees, and finally, a bay with birds circling far below you. And there, upon a mountain that rises up from the Bay of Inverness, the big gray Victorian mansion with 3 tall towers. And now, we fly right down and in through the wall, and there we are, inside the wall. Inside the dark passageway between the walls, where lives the Madonna Vampira. But she is not there. You are, alone. Make the hallway lighter with your mind, light enough to see well. Now we float past the gilded frames. Upon the walls, paintings of ladies with tight corseted elegance from ages of royalty past. And finally, we stop before a mirror. We see nothing. The mirror does not reflect our mind. We move into the mirror, through the glass, and finally, through the wall itself, and we are into the room of Chief Wampum.
Chief, try and be serious. You haven't answered my question.
I feel a presence in the room, you see.
What do you mean, a presence?
The listener.
Oh, come on, Chief. I know you know, but all you do is sit there in hysterics.
If you wish to know about the demon, ask Meenie-Eenie, you see.
I haven't seen Meenie-Eenie in some time, and you know it. I don't even know where to look for her.
Perhaps she can be found in the dragon's cave, yes, no?
Yeah, you're very funny, Chief.
Some people learn through pain and suffering. Others through laughter and joy.
You're one of the laughter and joy ones, I take it.
Why not?
Oh, boy. Look, tell me, Chief. Chief, if you were stuck out on a ledge about 12 inches wide and wished to leap a chasm to another ledge, but the chasm was 12 feet across, what would you do?
I would leap it.
Thanks. Well, how would you do that?
With my mind.
Yeah, well, that's okay for you to do, but what if you had to take your body along with you? Then how would you get across the chasm?
I would use an aluminum extension ladder. Very good for, how you say, yawning chasms.
Well, that's really funny, Chief.
Oh, yes, you can depend on me when the going gets rough and you are stuck out on Rue Morgue Avenue.
Thanks, Chief. I'll remember that. Well, look, I hate to leave you when you're having such a good time, Chief, but I've got to be off. Say, do you think that little Frida's all right?
Oh, yes, I'm certain she will return. Who pigtails, eh? How you say? Stand on end when danger looks near. But when she went poof, eh? Your pigtails were very relaxed, you see.
Well, that's what everyone keeps assuring me, that she knew what she was doing. I sure hope so. Okay, Chief. Thanks a lot. I'll see you.
Oh, namaste. Oh, little Frida.
Yes, Chief?
You were there all the time.
I came in when you brought in the listeners. Jack has courage.
Oh, he has foolish courage. But he will come through, I believe. Tell me, how much longer are you to remain in that state?
A little longer. I don't want to materialize yet. I don't wish to lie to Jack, and when he starts asking questions, I'm afraid I'll have to tell him everything.
Yes, he balances the circle. With his presence, all of us will be able to achieve what we were not able to achieve before, you see.
He may even find Lord Jowls.
His path through the fourth tower has many dangers. Each level contains worlds the rational mind is unaccustomed to. Our attempts to disorient this rational mind are but mere child's play to what he will now begin to experience. Mm. Oh, my goodness, we have done our best. May the gods now guide him safely, and may our prayers help to give him strength to endure.
Amen.
Now, for a glass of sherry, eh? Yes, no?
How did you know I can drink sherry?
Oh, there. Let me tell you, child. There was once a famous yogi, a beloved prankster who would dematerialize, you see, and then he would float into the homes of the English there in India. When the drinks were being passed, there would often be one drink disappeared into thin air.
I bet it tasted pretty good, huh, Chief?
Oh, it was a rare, exquisite warmth that flowed through every loose molecule, followed by a silent smacking of dematerialized lips, you see.
But the illusion falls away. As my teacher said, the skin cannot be ripped off the snake. The snake has to molt the skin. The illusion will fall away. At the rate it'll fall away, no matter what you do. You can scream from the rooftop, go crazy, rush to India, stand on your head and not eat. And it's all karmically determined that you're doing it in the first place. And in the second place, it's happening just at the rate it's happening. And all you're thinking you're doing something about it is phony. So you say, oh, well, if that's the case, I'm going to go and I'm going to just lie, cheat, steal, you know, lust. What the hell if it doesn't make any difference? So you say, go ahead and try. Because who wants to be brought down? In order to do that, you've got to leave here, and here is the best place, it turns out. You're hooked, finally. You're hooked on the here and now. It's totally addictive.